We're going to unofficially call the meeting to order. Even though we don't have a quorum, we'll call it officially to order when we do have a quorum. We wanted to get started on the presentations that we have for us today. And we have the Veterans Affairs Bonding presentation before us. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourselves for the record.
Pam Barrows, Interim Deputy Commissioner.
And I'm Mike McKelney, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Legislative Director.
Welcome. You may proceed.
Thank you, sir. get organized here. I wanted to do just kind of a little bit of a background as far as the homes, or as far as the Minneapolis campus is concerned. If you go to the next slide, Mike, the campus itself. I wanted to give you a little background and history of where our residents are located on the Minneapolis campus. So this is an artist's view of the entire campus. Building 6 is a historical building, and it houses 91 currently, and most of our dementia residents are housed in that building. Building 9 was the building that we had to raise in 2000. We vacated that in November of 2008 due to structural deterioration. At that time, that housed 60 domiciliary residents. And because the Building 17, which is the zigzaggy building on campus, that had 250 residents for skilled, and we had dropped down to 200 skilled residents, vacated the 50-bed unit on the fourth floor. Because of some of the issues that we were having at the time. So when we vacated that building 9, we moved those 50 residents, domiciliary residents, into that 50-bed unit on the fourth floor of building 17, and then proceeded to start planning for the raising that building and constructing a new 100-bed skilled facility. That was started in August of 2010, the construction on that building, and completed in May of, it should be completed hopefully this spring and probably about May. Then from there, the department started looking at building 17. That was, they had done a campus-wide study to look at remodeling that building versus tearing that building down and rebuilding. And the cost factor favored tearing that building down and rebuilding. And so that planning process started with the north half of that building, and that's currently going on now. That was in the previous bonding. We received funds for doing that. So that construction should start shortly in April, and we're looking at down at the end, building 16. That building will be started first, and that will be remodeled, and that's part of the 17 North project. That building will be remodeled and house the 50 residents from the domiciliary in building 17. And then the north half will start in October of 2012. Completion for that building will be in 2014. So now we get to our current request, and that's for the building 17th, the south half of building 17th, which would also include a tunnel, distribution tunnel, and IT infrastructure funding. And that also includes building 15 and 18. They're all part of that 17 south project. And the next picture, the future configuration, shows what the campus would look like once that 17 south building is complete. The the goal would be to then have the three, we would have the building 9 would be 100 bed skilled, building 17 north would be 100 bed skilled, and then building 17 south would be 100 bed skilled. So the three, and we would be able to then go back up to our full complement for skilled, which would be 341. Right now we're at 291 residents. And then building 6 we would look at reducing the number in that building. The for our priority one in building 17 south, we're requesting $25.42 million. Are on the waiting list for the federal authorization of $17.55 million, and that's been conditionally approved. Actually, they were ready to give us that funding this spring, but we did not have the state match. This phase would complete the renovation of Building 17, and again, as I said, we would get a new 100-bed skilled facility. One of the desires of the legislature in the past has been for us to look at CMS certification for our homes. And as we move forward with that process, we found out that the Building 17 would not be given any waivers to qualify for CMS certification. So for us to even enable us to do that, the building would have to be complete. The tunnel part of this project would allow for HVAC and utilities distribution. It would also serve as the service tunnel for dietary housekeeping maintenance between all of the buildings. Without that, all of those functions would have to go through the main areas of the buildings, and it would take away from the goal of making this a home and the well-being of our residents' population. So it really would distract from what we're trying to achieve and everything that we're doing with our resident-centered care and our home-like trying to go from an institutional type of support system to a home-like support system for our veterans and our residents. And then the establishment of the new network and server room would replace the aging undercapacity LEC telecom closet. Currently that is in 17 North, so we really have to have that as part of the project. So that would be priority one, and then again the picture of what the campus and architectural drawing of what the campus would look like. And basically once this part of the project is done, that would be the campus itself would be in pretty good shape. There would be probably some minor things on an ongoing basis, but I don't envision any other real major building projects. Then priority two would be the taking building 13, on which is a you can't see it too clearly on this picture, but currently that is a historical building, and it's sitting unused. Our goal is to centralize our pharmacy operation for all 5 homes. We're doing it now for Minneapolis, Hastings, and Laverne, and hopefully bringing on Silver Bay shortly. And the pharmacy itself right now is in 17 South, so we do need to relocate it. The funding would be for interior demolition and remodeling of the unoccupied historical building, and the ultimate goal would be to provide remote dispensing. We're working with the Board of Pharmacy to hopefully achieve that, but that is taking longer than what we expected it to do. And then we would also put this project in and see if we could qualify for the federal match of 65%. The priority three is the department-wide asset preservation of $3.0 million. And again, some of our other campuses, the buildings are getting older. We need to address repairs beyond our daily maintenance needs at all of the homes. Laverne, Silverbay, and Hastings currently, they're in need of a variety of building repairs, included but not limited to resident room door replacement, nurse call replacement, boilers and burner parts replacement, storage building repairs, exterior envelopes, replacement of windows and doors. So that's basically our request for, and I would take any questions and hopefully be able to answer.
Questions for Barrows? If not, Mr. McElhaney, did you want to add anything?
Mr. Chair, the only thing I would add is that as I see that the committee was had a copy of our bonding pages that were dated January 17th, which showed six priorities. And as we've just briefed you, there's only three priorities that MDVA has in regards to capital investments. So just so that that's clear.
Okay. Well, if there are no further questions, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Now, the next item is to have discussion testimony on the potential $425,000 state cost for proposed state veterans cemetery in Fillmore County. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Excuse me. For the record, my name is David Swantek. I'm the director of our current State Veterans Cemetery, which is located north of Little Falls. I think this morning I'll just give you a little brief overview of where we've been with our state cemetery program for the last 17 years and where we hope to go with it here in the near future. Little Falls opened in 1994. And since that time, we've provided burial to over 4,200 veterans and their eligible dependents. We've seen a significant growth in what we do for burials at Little Falls. I arrived there in 1996. At that time, we were doing just over 100 burials a year. This past fiscal year, we did 405 burials. So since the time it opened, that represents about over 400% increase in the families that we've served in Little Falls. last summer, we were recognized. There's 81 state veteran cemeteries across the United States. The cemetery in Little Falls was recognized as one of four by the National Cemetery Administration for excellence of appearance. That award means a great deal to us. the way the cemetery started, it was a little tough going at the beginning. We didn't have a lot of maintenance money. When I got there in 96, there was really no grass on the grave sites. Families were starting to move veterans out of the cemetery to other cemeteries because of its appearance. So in that time, we've come a long way, and that's with great support from the legislature and also from our department. Simple overview of our expenditures. We operate on approximately $555,000 a year in Little Falls, and that breaks down to $341,000 for compensation and about $400,000 is general fund allocation. We have about $155,000 that we generate revenue from plot allowance payments from the federal government that we get for every veteran that we bury. We also charge a fee for the burial of a non-veteran spouse. So those two revenue generating items plus a few donations from time to time that provides us with that additional $155,000 per year for operating. $341,000 is out of that $555,000 is for compensation. We spend about $214,000 a year for operation and maintenance items, fuel, fertilizer, turf, seed, things that are required for our day-to-day operation in Little Falls. In 2008, Governor Pawlenty, as one of his veterans initiatives, asked us to look at the potential of additional state cemeteries. At that time, we focused on the northeast part of Minnesota in Duluth, and we partnered with the DNR quite quickly and identified a parcel of property in Jay Cook State Park that was announced, and the excitement built, and turns out that the access into the property became problematic and something that we couldn't overcome, and that project unfortunately is, in some terms, has gone by the wayside over the last several years. We've since that time looked at 30 additional properties in Duluth. We're trying not to spend money to acquire property. We are looking at a piece of property up there that's up on Highway 53 near Pike Lake. It's a school trust fund property. Cautiously optimistic that it may have some opportunity for a cemetery up there. But we do have the legislative authority to look for and design three additional state cemeteries. So the Northeast was the first one, and then we also were working down in Southwest Minnesota. That's been difficult. Property values are extremely high down there. There's not a lot of state-owned land that's available for development like this. And so although that project also remains on our radar, finding sites for a cemetery down there has also proved difficult. Southeast Minnesota really came about last year. Fillmore County came forward. It was the first time a local government or even working with the DNR or other state entities had come forward with a piece of property that looked like it had some real promise. And this piece of property down in Fillmore County is just outside of a small town of Preston. It's 155 acres, very beautiful piece of property along the Root River. And we went down and took a look at it, made a presentation to the county commissioners. At that time, they were thinking of donating us about 40 acres of that land. And once we kind of explained our design process and what we required for usable burial ground to yield a 50-year life out of a state veteran cemetery, their donation offer went from 40 to the entire piece of property of 155 acres, which is roughly four times larger than the cemetery in Little Falls. These projects are funded through the National Cemetery Administration. They have a Veteran Cemetery Grant Service, and they provide funding for the establishment, expansion, or improvement of state veterans' cemeteries. The grant program provides 100% of construction funding. The state's required to front the design costs of these projects. Once the project is approved and bid tab has been calculated, the bid tab along with what the state's expended for design becomes the basis of the grant award for the project, with those design costs being reimbursed back to the state. This project in Southeast Minnesota, as well as the Northeast and Southwest, are all anticipated to be about $8 million in scope. All three of these projects are competing very high on the priority list that the National Cemetery Administration puts out every year. Currently, of the top four projects across the United States for the establishment of new cemeteries, the three projects in Minnesota rank number 1, 3, and 4. So If we can find property for these projects, we're not going to have any problem getting grant funding from the National Cemetery Administration to construct them. State's obligation, long-term obligation, is the operation of these facilities. The state agrees to operate the cemeteries according to National Cemetery Administration standards and measures in return for that construction funding. And today I've been asked to present what those anticipated costs would be for Fillmore County, for Southeast Minnesota, and these costs could be very comparable to the other potential state cemeteries in Southwest and Northeast Minnesota. So as we move forward, I'm comfortable in saying that this annual appropriation request would be required for each of the additional new cemeteries. Demographics show that about 44,000 veterans within a 75-mile radius of that area in Southeast Minnesota will be provided an additional burial opportunity within 75 miles of their home. And based on those numbers, we anticipate that we could provide up to 500 burials per year at this new cemetery. So if you take that and compare it to Little Falls doing 405, it's a similar operation in size and scope. So our request for annual appropriation from the state to satisfy the requirement to the National Cemetery Administration is for $425,000 per year. Again, we'll have the opportunity to supplement that amount with the revenues that we generate from dependent burial fees and plot allowance payments from the federal government for every veteran that we would bury at the cemetery. That would represent a staff of six FTE positions, supervisor and office staff, and a grounds crew. We deal with funeral homes typically and scheduling burials. We arrange honor guard services for families that request them. It's a unique job that we do every day. We do up to seven burials a day in Little Falls, which means we can have a lot of grieving families coming through our door on a very regular basis every day, and we never know what we're going to get with those families. You got a mix of people that are angry, sad, celebrations of life. We deal with a mix of people that come through. So I have a real unique staff in Little Falls, and it's at times difficult work. We've buried several KIAs from Iraq and Afghanistan, and I think as citizens of the state of Minnesota, we can all be proud of offering this service as a tribute to our veterans for their sacrifices and what they've done for our country. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions that the committee would have.
Thank you, Mr. Swantek. Members, we do now have a quorum, and so we'll officially call the meeting to order. And you have before you the minutes from yesterday. Would someone move those minutes?
So moved.
Representative Lohmer moves the minutes. Any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. And thanks to Representative Benson and Representative Murray for filling in for me yesterday. I appreciate it. You can tell I'm still a little bit under the weather, but getting better. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, sir, you said that these new cemeteries require staff, six FTEs. What presently, and a cost, annual cost to the state of $425,000, what does it cost for Fort Snelling right now and for Little Falls as far as the state's costs to maintain these facilities?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, as far as Fort Snelling, I can't speak to that. I don't know. Them being operated by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. I can't say they're the fourth busiest national cemetery in the country, so their budget on an annual basis would probably be what our budget request would be for a lifetime. So, Little Falls, you know, we anticipate this operation being very similar in nature, and Little Falls is requiring a general fund allocation of about $400,000 per year right now. That is for a staff of 5 1/4 FTEs. We anticipate another, you know, additional 3/4 FTE to address the fact that, you know, we'll probably be doing about 100 more burials down in southeast Minnesota. So, you know, our request is based on what we're doing in Little Falls. It costs us about $214,000 per year to operate for expenses and maintenance, and $341,000 for compensation for our 5 1/4 FTE employees. So again, we would assume that not only southeast Minnesota, but these other additional cemeteries would require similar staffing levels and funding.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned, along with the costs, that you get supplemental income for private burials. How much money is that total?
Mr.
Chairman, Representative Anderson, during the past fiscal year in Little Falls, we generated $155,000 in revenue. And that's between a VA plot allowance that we get from the federal government for every veteran that we bury, and then the fees that we charge for the non-veteran spouse who's eligible for burial, the fee that they pay for their burial. So between those two, that's the $155,000 that we generate annually based on our Little Falls operation.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, so is that 155, is that on top of the 400,000 you're talking about, or is that included in your overall budgeting process for the year? And I don't know what the breakdown, I'd like to see a breakdown on how what your costs are at your cemetery at Little Falls, if I could.
Mr. Swantek.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, yeah, the $155,000 is in addition to the $400,000 that we use for as our general fund allocation for Little Falls. So our operation in Little Falls currently is costing us about $555,000 a year. So again, we would assume that these new cemeteries would be very similar in nature.
Thank you.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see that Representative Davids is back, and I wonder if he would potentially ask or answer some questions just about the, if we move forward on this project, and just a little that I know about 52, because my district doesn't get down to Preston, of course, but is two questions. First, is that an improved area of Route 52 already? And would you see a need to bring some kind of request before the Transportation Committee for a bonding eventually to improve 52 for cutouts and whatever would be needed in order to accommodate, you know, the kind of traffic flow that we, you know, you usually consider as far as funerals and the like in that area?
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Benson. We've had meetings with the DOT. There will need to be some site work done to make that a little bit safer area to get in, because there, as Mr. Swantek mentioned, there'll be a great number of funerals there per year. I am not aware that, from what I understood, you were at the meeting, from what I understood, they would not need additional bonding money to do that. They could do that within their existing budgets, I believe. Maybe Mr. Swantek could also address that. But before he does, Mr. Chairman and members, as you know, I've been very supportive of state veteran cemeteries throughout the past years. And even before there was a possibility in southeastern Minnesota, I was very supportive of the Northeast. And they've had some site issues, as Mr. Swantek mentioned earlier. We put in previous bills, state veteran cemetery for the Southwest. And then it was determined that there was also one needed in the southeast so that you could go a 75-mile radius from wherever the location would be. Well, the Fillmore County Commissioners in Fillmore County stood up and I think exercised great wisdom in volunteering to donate what we used to call the county farm, about 155 acres, as Mr. Swantek has said. And if you look at the land prices in southeastern Minnesota right now, anywhere from $8,000 to $11,000 per acre, I think the county commissioners put a lot of skin in the game on this one, probably about a $1.5 million donation if they were to go on the open market and sell that piece of property. So now, Mr. Swantek, I guess I've got a question for Mr. Swantek at some point here, Mr. Chairman. Of the 1, 3, and 4, where's the southeast? On the, or can you say
Mr.
that?
Mr. Swantek.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, the southeast project is number one on the list. It does represent the highest underserved population within a 75-mile radius, according to the demographics from the National Cemetery Administration.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Representative Benson's question, as far as I know, I have not had any requests from the DOT that they're going to need additional funds. They may need to make a few changes there where the road would be entering, and we've had those meetings, but I'm not aware of any request for any further funds.
Any problem? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, it says in a little, kind of a little byline from the Winona Daily News, and this was on the 26th of January, that the county hasn't officially donated the land yet for the pending lands for the this cemetery. What do you know? Has it changed or in the last month or so?
Chair Davids?
Mr. Chairman, that may be a better question for Mr. Swantek, because as these negotiations have gone on, I'm not exactly sure what has been finalized. Maybe Mr. Swantek could address that.
Mr. Swantek?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, no, that has not changed, and the reason for that is we're going through some site suitability assessment studies, environmental, cultural, even conceptual layout. We don't want to acquire a piece of property from the county that turns out not to work. You know, that could have happened in Duluth. If we would have administratively transferred that property and all of a sudden, you know, there's a problem and we have to go elsewhere. So we're very careful in the timing of that transfer. We're working very closely with the commissioners in Fillmore County. Our comfort level is very high at this point. And before we would get into a full, what I would characterize as a full design effort with our consultant, we want to make sure that we don't have any red flags that are coming up, and we have not discovered any down there at this point.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Swantek, so you're doing some preliminary studies on the land and looking at all the different things that could have an impact on this area. Where does your money, is it under a certain area within the state government, and who's paying for these preliminary studies and things like that? What is it that, or is this going to be part of the overall package that's going to be lumped into the $8 million or the $425? I'm just not seeing where these costs are coming for you to do these preliminary, or has it already been projected? Is it in some kind of a fund? If you could give me some details on that, that'd be great.
Mr. Swantek?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, in 2009 we received a $1.5 million appropriation as part of the bonding bill, and up to $500,000 of that $1.5 million could be used for acquisition. As I've said, we've not used any acquisition dollars to this point. It was that money that we encumbered against a design contract with a consultant that's for the design of two state veteran cemeteries. Last year, Representative Davids and others were instrumental in amending that language in the bonding bill. My concern in bringing the southeast region into the mix was that the work that had already been done in northeast and southwest Minnesota, one of those areas was going to get left out. So we amended the language last year and simply created a mechanism that upon reimbursement of those design dollars from the National Cemetery Administration, they go into a special account that then the dollars can be reused for the additional cemetery design, at which time, you know, we're done designing cemeteries, then the language in that bonding bill has the money go for asset preservations to the veterans' homes.
Chair Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Anderson's question, Mr. Swantek was exactly right. I was very careful in the last couple of years because we were putting the Southeast in, not to jeopardize the Northeast or the Southwest. We were very, very careful to do that. So what we did is, as Mr. Swantek described, we put in a mechanism in saying that this one seems to be ready to go, as close as it can be ready to go. I didn't want to take away from Mary Murphy because that would hurt her feelings, and so we didn't. So the Northeast is still there and the Southwest is still there, but they haven't moved as quickly because of site issues. And then, as Mr. Swantek said, I think it's very important to note that when this is all done, then that money then goes to the veterans' home. I think it was in Hastings, or in general. Okay, so that money then will go to asset preservation for veterans' homes in the state.
Mr. Swantek, a couple of other questions here, just to make sure we understand. This $425,000, is any portion of that currently in any budget, or is that all new money?
Mr. Chairman, that would be all new money.
Okay. And the second question is, if we were able to come up with that in a next year's budget, that additional amount, are you anticipating another bonding request as well, or do you have bonding dollars you need to make this happen?
Mr. Chairman, no additional bonding money will be required for these projects. The mechanism that was put into place with that amended language last year leaves us with the funds that will be necessary to design any of these cemeteries that would be deemed necessary with land becoming available. As far as the operational money, you know, these projects take a while. We're going to be a year plus in design, and in a multi-million dollar development like this as a cemetery is a year plus for construction. So at the most aggressive schedule that I could imagine possible, we wouldn't need these operating dollars for a couple of years.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Swantek, so are you under the Department of Veterans Affairs? Is that who's over you as far as you are? Are you a separate entity unto yourself wholly? And how does this then affect their budget for purposes of looking at our budget for next year?
Mr. Swantek.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, no, we are a division of the Department of Veterans Affairs within Minnesota, so I am an employee of the Veterans Affairs Department.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
So, Anderson.
Mr. Swantek, so how do you look at this project here as far as the amount of money for a budget request? How does that, is it going to affect the overall budgeting for the Department of Veterans Affairs?
Mr. Swantek?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I'd probably defer that question to our finance director. I'm unsure of how that would impact the overall department's budget.
Thank you.
Any further question? If not, thank you, Mr. Swantek. Thank you, Chair Davids.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And I think I said Mary Murphy. It should be the Honorable Representative Murphy. Excuse me. I apologize. Thank you for your consideration.
Correction, so noted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to hear from the Minnesota, I should say, Amateur Sports Commission. Mr. Paul Erickson.
Good
Welcome, Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Chairman Lanny.
Paige will help you there. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like you to introduce Dwayne Ahrens, who's the chair of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, appointed by the governor, and he's going to do some introductory remarks, and then I'll take it from there.
Yeah. Welcome, Mr. Ahrens.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Again, I'm Dwayne Ahrens, and I'm the chairman of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. Just a couple of quick notes, you know, before we kind of get into our presentation here, just a kind of an umbrella about our organization. The Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission has a $71 million economic impact to the state of Minnesota. And we just measure dollars coming in from outside the state of Minnesota in here. We don't measure dollars coming from Rochester or Duluth. This is out-of-state dollars, and we can measure those real easily because we see the registration forms. We know exactly how many kids are coming in from out-of-state. We even know where they're staying. We have about 5 million annual participants and visitors to the 11 statewide facilities. We have millions of media impressions annually for Minnesota, Schwann's USA Cup, for example, had 4.5 million media impressions in 2011. And a key component to our strategy is building state-of-the-art facilities to draw out-of-state visitors. So we're not really building, you know, facilities in Blaine for kids from Blaine to play soccer there. We want kids from California. We want kids from Texas to play soccer there. And that's the same part of our principle that we'll be using. Later on, you're going to be hearing from the Marshall folks, and the key there again is to get kids from South Dakota and Iowa, and even Nebraska there to come spend money in Marshall. So thank you. I'll pass it on.
Mr. Erickson, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Today's weather reminds me when I lived in Moorhead. Those winds coming across North Dakota. Anyway, in front of you, you'll have two handouts. One, the overview of the Amateur Sports Commission's six capital budget requests, and then Representative Blazinski will and people from Marshall will present the number two project. Just to go through the handout for a little bit more overview, Chairman Ahrens mentioned the annual economic impact. You can see from the chart on the second page how that's grown over the years. And then the next sheet that's got a couple of dollar bills on it is, I think, an interesting fact. This $71 million that our facilities generate from out-of-state visitors probably generates approximately $5 million in sales tax. All of the facilities that you as legislators have built for the Amateur Sports Commission cost Minnesota about $3.8 million in principal and interest, and we got this from the Department of Finance a couple years ago. And then there would be like a $1.2 million surplus to the state. So if we could collect as an agency our own out-of-state sales tax, we wouldn't need to come to you to ask for a specific bonding authority, because there's ample dollars from what we generate from out-of-state visitors. And of course, that dollar bill at the bottom, there's $66 million that's going to Minnesota businesses, hotels, restaurants, and so on. The next page is a map of Minnesota, and this is going to be a prelude to why we're presenting the projects we are. You'll see the 11 facilities that the legislature has funded since 1987. And you'll notice they're center and to the east, that the entire western border of Minnesota is without a Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission facility. So if you turn to the next page, you'll see our master plan. Our board 4 or 5 years ago said, you know, we're not the Minneapolis St. Paul Amateur Sports Commission, we're the Minnesota, and we really should have a commitment to bring this benefit throughout Minnesota. So therefore, if you turn back to the front page, you'll see our number one request to the legislature is the Northwest amateur sports facility in Moorhead. And our number two proposal is our Southwest proposal for Marshall, Minnesota. Now, the next page talks about how and why does this work? Why should the state of Minnesota take its precious bonding dollars and invest in amateur sports when you have roads, bridges, many other things? Well, the reason is that you get a return on your investment, which we demonstrated earlier. And then we ask, well, what makes an amateur sports center? We get requests from every burg and hamlet in Minnesota that would like to have a major amateur sports facility. But I just want to put in context why we're recommending Moorhead, why we're recommending Marshall. First of all, these communities are committed to state-of-the-art facilities. There's already high-quality facilities in both of those communities. Also, there needs to be enough hotel infrastructure. There's no point in building a great amateur sports facility if, when they hold tournaments, there's no place to stay. And places like Moorhead and Marshall have quality hotels. Tourism amenities. Are there other attractions and things to do in these communities? And then also, does the community have a history of hosting sports events? So those are the ingredients which make a quality regional center. Now, the next page is a summary of the Moorhead project. and the nice thing about both the Moorhead and the Marshall project is that there is almost a 2-to-1 non-state match to the state request. Moorhead has already invested heavily in a major amateur sports facility, primarily outdoor fields for soccer. And it's a $14 million project, and they're recommending $4 million from the state. So, and the best way I think I can describe, just as a generalization, you know that Blaine, with 4 million visitors a year, and the economic impact that that drives, is the world's largest soccer complex, world's largest ice complex. Moorhead and Marshall are sort of mini Blaines. They're field complexes. They have good ice arenas in town and so on. And so we know that that formula works for multi-sport activity, and it'll work in those communities. So the first project, then, is the city has already made a significant commitment, and we're just talking about completing that project. The second project is the bill that's been introduced by Representative Swedinsky, and at the end of the presentation, we'll turn it over to the state representative to present that project. Project number three. Now, Mr. Chairman, I'd be a little unorthodox. You know, I've got the silver hair to show I've been around a few years here, and in a year when there's going to be a smaller than $1 billion bonding bill, we generally don't have as many amateur sport projects as we would like. So our agency would like to emphasize projects one and two, because they're our two top priorities, and they solve that regional imbalance. And then also, actually, five and six, which I'll get to in a minute, because they're small, and I think they're good investments for the state. But I just want to give you an overview of projects three and four. You'll see a map in front in your packet of the National Sports Center in Blaine, and it is probably the world's largest amateur sports complex. And economies of scale creates an exciting destination for amateur sport athletes from around the country. And so we're the world's largest soccer complex and the world's largest ice arena complex with eight sheets. This proposal expands that legacy, and so we would add some additional fields in project number three. But again, we're kind of putting that project on the back burner. And then the next project we're very excited about is to build a National Youth Baseball Center, where we'd build 20 baseball fields, and there's already four baseball fields that the city has, so we'd have 24 and then a small stadium, and that would be the nation's and the world's largest youth baseball. So imagine the kind of the triple crown for Minnesota to have the largest soccer, largest hockey, and largest baseball complex in our state, and we know the formula works with the sports that we're doing, but we're going to put that project a little bit on the back burner. We've got some exciting news to report probably in the next several months of major sponsors, major multi-million dollar sponsors that have expressed an interest in this project. But having said that, let's go then to the last two projects. In your packet, there's a St. Paul project. and it's we're asking for $100,000 for some planning monies. This was a site that originally was an Exxon Mobil refinery, and now that facility's been removed. It's been soil corrected, and it's really difficult for our agents to identify multi-field sites in either Minneapolis or St. Paul. So this has a lot of promise to have an urban tournament complex, and I think there's some here from the city of St. Paul if you have questions later. The last project is the most boring project on the list, but it's one that is, there's a great case for, and the governor has placed this in his recommendation to you, and that is the original buildings that were built in the legislature in 1987, the heating and air conditioning units need to be replaced, and I'm sure that's why the governor's office placed that in the governor's budget for $375. So with that, Mr. Chairman, should we move to the Marshall project?
Yes, sir. Some questions. Representative Stenzer.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, I'm just struck. I've been hearing a lot of bonding requests, as you can imagine, far more bonding requests than we will ever have money to fund. Oftentimes, they're for infrastructure and or for repairs, and it's almost as if many projects, I won't pick on you in particular, but if you get $375,000 for, was it HVAC or air conditioning?
Yeah, right.
Is there no, I mean, most property managers would have a sinking fund to replace their roof because they know they have a 20-year roof. So over 20 years, they set aside money so that when the roof wears out, they replace that. And that's also true for, you know, I suppose major plumbing or for HVAC systems. Does that happen for you? But oftentimes the bonding risks come in and say, well, gee, all our stuff wore out as if we didn't expect them to wear out. And then oftentimes the bonding request comes in saying, well, gee, we really have to update all of our air conditioners. You know, didn't last longer than they were supposed to. So I'm just curious if you have budgets and do you prepare for that sometimes? And how is this maybe unique in this situation that you actually need bonding to replace something that has a set life expectancy?
Mr. Erks.
Mr. Chairman, Representative. The National Sports Center is fortunate, I think, be one of the few, if not the only, state facility that does not operate without a state subsidy. We have 4 million visitors. We have, I think, a $13 million operating budget, all from non-state sources. The margins in amateur sports are pretty thin. The facility is able to handle all of their short-term repairs, but when it comes to the 20-year capital replacements, like several years ago, the legislature approved appropriations for a new roof on one of the buildings and a new parking lot. Our tradition and our kind of is to come to the legislature for the 20-year cap replacements. But every year there's a number of repairs that occur in different parts of the facility that the operating budget does handle. But that facility, while it brings in lots of tourism, economic impact to the community, does not produce enough net revenue to cover the 20-year plus capital replacements.
Thank you. And you mentioned increasing the ball fields to you know, get a world-class sort of ball field and ice arena. What do you expect that to cost long-term? Or does that increase your operating budget and your ongoing need? Or is that something that you figure sort of pays for itself with fees, user fees?
Mr. Erickson?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Stenzer. We believe that as well as the current facilities, the ice arena or the soccer fields generate enough revenue to cover all of the operating expenses, staffing, repair, mowing, and so on. And I think when it comes to like the baseball facility, the facility could handle all of the repairs, and there wouldn't be the 20-year roof replacement that there would be with a building. So I want to rest assured that we won't be back in 20 years should we be fortunate to get that facility to replace the fields, because that's more of just an ongoing maintenance that our operating budget can handle.
Thank you. You anticipated my other question. Appreciate that.
Zen Khan.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'd like to make a couple of comments on this. One, I'm very impressed by the amount of non-state match. As you recall, I raised this with the Historical Society, that I thought they weren't being aggressive enough on looking for a non-state match. And let me just give one of the things that some of these effects may go on for years afterwards, give a very small personal experience. One of our nephews who lives in Alaska actually was here for the soccer tournament every year. Sorry, we didn't do the hotel stuff because he stayed with us, but we laid out a lot, so that probably covered it. And after he was graduated from high school, and so he ended up coming to McAllister, I think probably because of his experience in Minnesota, and you know, with that good Alaskan oil money, I think he totally paid his whole way. And so I think that exposure for young kids can also have a lasting effect. Anyway, we had a lot of acquaintance with the Blaine facility. We were out there for many, many days, over 3 years, I think. So.
And if I could add, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Arndt.
And to hop back to the baseball thing a little bit, we are going to do RFPs for the economic impact and market studies for the baseball project as well, too. And so we'll be able to prove that it does pay for itself and that there is a return to the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Kahn, we just had an amateur sports hockey tournament in our community, and we had hockey players and families from all over the country and all over Canada. The economic impact of that is very significant when you're drawing people from a long ways away. You had people from Arizona suffering the snowstorm from Minnesota. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ahrens, you mentioned that economic impact for the Sports Commission is $71 million. If you break down those 11 sports facilities, I take it, and I'm guessing, that Blaine is probably your biggest provider of that $71 million. How much is that? What if you were to break down those 11, what on a percentage or on an actual amount of money, how much money do you get from each of those facilities, those 11 that you have? And you mentioned that you have a $13 million budget for Blaine and that you still have to rely on subsidy from the state to make it go. And yet I still hear you say you're gaining money to be able to pay for your operating costs. I guess I got a lot of questions there, just to see if you can bring up to speed as to why, if we're such a great impact here, we still need subsidies for your.
Well, I can start with that answer, Mr. Chairman. The economic impact for the Blaine complex, I believe, is $40 million a year. And the economic impact for the other ones are broken out. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe Paul can help me with that, exactly what they are like that. But the funds that we get from the state of Minnesota are not operating funds. Those operating funds are actually covered in our registration fees, our sponsorships, and so forth. And those are and the funds we get from the state of Minnesota are salaries and so forth. And Paul can probably talk to you a little bit more about that. Thank you,
Mr. Erickson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson. You know, Chairman Ahrens is right that the Blaine facility has $40 million, and we have the breakdown. I don't have it with me, but I'll be happy to provide that for you. What I mentioned earlier in the presentation, if our agency could collect the sales tax from the out-of-state visitors, we wouldn't need to ask for a special bonding authority. But in amateur sports, a percentage of the capital dollars, I think, needs to be taken care of by a public entity. Otherwise, the economics doesn't work. And so that when a city's building an ice arena or the state's building a sports facility, is that the capital dollars, the tradition is that comes in part from the state. So I do want to mention the facility in Blaine, which you just mentioned. I believe we've found more non-state capital dollars than state for that facility. The ice arena, for example, the 8 sheets, there's $1 million of state money in the 8-sheet ice arena, and it's a $24 million facility. So where we can leverage strong matches, we will. But in some sports, to make the facility happen, the state needs to take a percentage of the capital dollars for it to work. Otherwise, the formula simply doesn't work.
Mr. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Erickson, is the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome under the Sports Facilities Commission preview?
Mr. Erickson?
Mr. Chairman, no, it's not. That's under the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, and they have they only oversee the Hubert Humphrey Metrodome. And we don't have any connection to them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you say a $40 million impact to the state, does that mean $40 million comes into the Department of Revenue because of the impact, or does that mean this is a total amount of business that the local hotels and so forth are receiving?
Mr. Representative, that's $40 million from, that's out-of-state dollars spent in Minnesota, not in-state dollars. Out-of-state dollars, and like I mentioned, we can track that fairly good, too, because we do see the registration forms. And so we know how many teams are coming in, we know how many players are coming in, and the forms even mention how many of their parents are coming in. We even know where they're staying at. And so we know exactly precisely how many kids are coming in from outside the state, and that's the total number of dollars spent from outside of Minnesota.
Representative Gunther.
Basically, you know, I can appreciate that, and I see that in many venues, whether they're dances or whatever they are. But what comes into the Department of Revenue that takes care of the money that the state gives the facilities, does, you know, how much goes in the Department of Revenue that really counts to me? Not what the total dollars that are spent on the various venues that you're talking about.
Mr. Erickson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, we can track the $71 million that's spent in Minnesota and the estimates on that spending, since most of it is sales taxable, it's about $5 million a year. That new money that comes from outside Minnesota, into the Department of Revenue.
Okay, thank you.
And it would be fair to point out then that that's $5 million that would not be coming into the Revenue Department if those tournaments weren't held in Minnesota. Correct?
Correct. That is correct.
Thank you. That's
pretty good. Representative Berto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Erickson, Mr. Aarons. I would just like to recommend to members, if you haven't been, for example, to Blaine when events are actually happening, I would advise you to do so. I'd been there in the past for bonding trips, and when you're there in the summer, when not a lot is going on in the complex, it's not the same as when you walk in when they have four hockey games going on at the same time, and my grandson is playing. just a brief commercial message. But, Mr. Aarons, do you have any basketball courts there?
Sir, Chairman, Representative Erdahl, I don't believe that we do have basketball courts there, but maybe something in the future.
Chairman, I met Mr. Aarons at the St. Anthony basketball court. That's why. I
Mr. Chairman, if I could add, he's actually a pretty good basketball player, too.
That was for the record?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll take that word. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this sheet here, you mentioned $3.8 million costs to the state. I must have missed that when you made the presentation. What is the cost that we're talking there? For each facility, that's the total amount that are is costing the state of Minnesota for that?
Mr. Erickson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, we received that figure from the Minnesota Department of Revenue, I guess OMB now, like a couple years ago. That is what the state has to pay to retire the bonds. That's the principal and interest. And so that is what the Amateur Sports Commission history of facilities cost the state of Minnesota.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Anderson?
Those bonds, Mr. Erickson, where are we in the retirement of those bonds for the facilities that we're talking here?
Mr. Erickson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, well, some facilities were appropriated in 1987, and they're generally either 20 or 25-year bonds, and others have been progressively been funded over the years. So I guess some of them would start to be retired the next several years.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And Representative Swedzinski, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members for hearing the Southwest Minnesota's Amateur Sports Commission bid for bonding for our facility out in Southwest Minnesota in the city of Marshall. Marshall is truly a regional center of economic vitality and educational excellence, where common goals and cooperation set the stage for regional success. Marshall is the home of the Schwann Food Company, where it employs over 22,000 people worldwide. Marshall is also the home of Runnings Farm and Fleet and hosts large employers such as the Vera Marshall Regional Medical Center, U.S. Bank Corp., Southwest State University, and Archil Daniels Midland. The Southwest Regional Amateur Sports Commission is asking for $4 million in state bonding dollars that, when combined with a large local contribution at a 2-to-1 match, has really an opportunity to really set the stage for Southwest Minnesota, and the events we're trying to hold out there. I've asked a few members from the community, Cal Brink, who is the head of the Marshall Chamber of Commerce, Roger Mattson, who is the co-chair of the Southwest Regional Amateur Sports Commission, and Alan Poff from Schwann's. If you have any questions, we'd like to just have these guys testify a little bit about the project and more specifics, and appreciate your guys' time. Thank you.
You bet. Please identify yourself for the record, and you may proceed.
Cal Brink from the Marshall Chamber of Commerce, as well as the Economic Development Authority in Marshall.
Alan Poff, Senior Director of Government Affairs for the Schwann Food Company.
I'm Roger Madison. I'm the co-chair of the Southwest Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, and I'm the CEO for Bremer Banks in Southwest Minnesota. And thank you for this opportunity to talk. You have a presentation in front of you that I'd like to go through in just a few minutes here. And turning to the page 2 on it, which shows our board of directors for the organization, we have a broad representation of our community, people interested in the physical health of the community members, as well as the economic health of the community as a whole. We have a project that benefits a number of organizations, and very specifically the local school district, the city of Marshall, the university, Southwest Minnesota State University, and the area. If you look at page 3, it gives you just an indication of the process we've been going through since 2008 to develop this opportunity. The information is in front of you on the things that we've done to get to this point, which includes a vote in November on the bottom subject for a sales tax that will provide the funding on the local basis, as Representative Swedzinski mentioned, at the 2-to-1 factor. The next page gives you just a geographic information piece, which is the same as Paul Erickson and Dwayne Aronson's indicated, and is the basic reason why we were chosen by them as a regional center, is our access to outside of the state communities that would be interested in coming to Marshall for amateur sports activities. The next page, we talk about creating a destination. We're really using the Blaine National Sports Center as a model for us. We're creating a destination for continuity for retail, sports, education, and hospitality. The education piece comes in many ways, in that the facilities we're using are also used for things like Pursuit of Excellence, which is a premier marching band event that brings in as many as 16 bands from outside the state to participate, from high schools, and the Schwann Speech Spectacular, which brings over 1,000 students to the complex we already have in place participate. If you look at page 6, you'll see that complex, which we're not starting from scratch. We have an existing facility between the university and the high school that provides us great venues for doing the kinds of activities we've been doing for a number of years and want to continue to do. So while the physical aspect of that complex is very important, what's even more important about it is the collaboration and cooperation we've had for a number of years within the organizations that participate, including the school district, the SMSU, the YMCA, the city, the county, the sports boosters groups, and our Marshall Area Fine Arts Council that participates with us. You'll see the layout, which includes the proposed sports center, multi-sport fields, including soccer and softball and youth baseball. What we are putting here is based on a study that was done in 2007 in participation with Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission and identifying what are the things we have the best potential of drawing people in from outside of the state. Some of the things you see may not be the end result in placement, because a major factor for us is the economic development, the space that is available. We intend to see hotels and other retail opportunities come into those areas, and if we need to move some things around to make that more successful, that would be the direction we would go. Page 7 gives you some information on the project financing and backs up the representations that Representative Swedzinski made. Today we can tell you that the Schwann Food Company, which Alan is here as a representative of, has donated the land. They are the landowners for that area, and they have donated the land necessary for our project, and at that value of somewhere near that $650,000 number, that has already taken place. You know, a lot of the things that were mentioned in the discussion about the value of regional amateur sports centers, it only happens if there are a lot of these factors listed on page 8 that take place. It's a checklist and is one that we fulfill pretty well. If we go down that list, we have some very good things that continue to do well on that page. The next two pages give you an indication of the growth we've had in a tough period of time from 2007 and 8, 9, 11, 10, 11, where we've moved from up 30% in the number of participants we already have coming into our community over the last 4 years, as well as the number of spectators. Dollars have increased as well to the total of 15%. It's one of those beliefs that we have, and that certainly fuels the Blaine Sports Center, is that people will spend money on their youth and continue to do that even through the toughest of economic times. And we continue to grow in that area. We look to improve that. We are a regional hub today. The regional significance is important. We have a unique characteristic in Marshall in the growth every day from 14,000 people to 22,000 as we bring in population from around the area. We are creating capacity, we're implementing development strategies, and we are a major benefit to the this effort is a major benefit to SMSU. They are an engaged partner because, as referring back to Representative Kahn's comments about the influence of young people when they come into an area, we're hoping to bring them in and convince them that Marshall and SMU is a great place to return to down the road for their college education. We also have some unique characteristics in that about 40% of the sales revenue that we're going to be generating will come from outside of Marshall itself. We have a higher pull power. It's an index used to determine how well we do at bringing in outside dollars, and we have a very strong position there. The bottom of that page talks about some communities. We approached these communities last year to ask for support under the guise of, if it's good for Marshall, is it good for the rest of these communities? We received 100% support for those for the activities that we're doing. We also want to represent over the next few pages how Marshall is continuing to do well even during a tough time. You'll see that we've continued in growth in population, the one of the few communities in southwest and in outstate Minnesota that accomplished that over the last 10 years. And as you look at the page about employment statistics, we've grown there as well. While our major corporations like Schwann's has had to work through their right sizing, we have continued to grow in jobs in the community as a whole. The page after that gives you an indication on how significant it is to our community for Marshall to do well with the people that are coming in from outside of Marshall itself to make things happen. In the employment statistics, where we continue to be very strong in southwest Minnesota and want to continue that, and are asking for your help to move us forward, not to save us from a desperate place, but to help us to continue to move forward. The state of Minnesota needs this regional hub in southwest Minnesota, and we're looking for support to continue that. So thank you for this opportunity to present that. And if there are questions, be glad to answer them.
Questions from committee. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before you started your presentation, I got on your website to take a look at a few things, and you mentioned it earlier. I have noticed on page 7 that there's no mention in your capital project financing about the sales tax. But if you could enlighten us a little bit about, you know, heaven forbid on your part at least, that it doesn't pass. I'm sure you got great plans for that money. But would it have an impact at all on your plans for this if that should not, that referendum shouldn't be successful?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, that the representative, that is a critical piece. We will not be able to do this at this time without that referendum. That is our financing tool, and it would also be an indication of community support, obviously, and that is a key part of why we would move forward. If we don't have the community support, then it isn't a project that we want to pursue. We do believe that down the road, this is something we will continue to pursue. We would not give up at that point. We would continue to look at opportunities to allow that to pass. I will tell you that over the last, since 2003, there have been three very significant referendums in the community, building of a high school and two levy referendums for operating dollars, and all passed successfully. We have a strong support in the community for projects that are generated locally, and we believe very strongly that this is one that would be approved.
Follow up. So then I can assume that thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can assume that the bigger portion of the city's contribution will come from proceeds from the sales tax.
Okay. That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, gentlemen, for your presentation. Representative Swedzinski, members of the committee will be ranking all of the projects or indicating their support, and we will be then forwarding that to the Capital Investment Committee. So that's our plan.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more thing before we go. You know, I think the City of Marshall really has an opportunity here in partnering with the state to really set a goal to not just draw business within the state, but also draw business from Sioux Falls, from Iowa. You know, there's been a lot of indications that with a facility located in southwest Minnesota, we'll have an opportunity to bring business, bring families, and bring events in to Minnesota and reap the benefits of those people spending their dollars here. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
If I could just take a moment, Cal Brink with the Chamber again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee, for allowing us to present. First of all, I just want to make a couple quick notations, kind of piggyback on what Roger said. Two things that come to mind. The fact that there was resolutions passed by all of the surrounding communities, I think, is really instrumental in the support for the entire project, as well as if you looked at that somewhat of a scatter graph that shows where the jobs, where people live that come to work in Marshall. They live in many of the surrounding communities around Marshall.
And to be quite honest, they rely on our growth to provide growth to them. Many of the people that work in Marshall live in those communities, spend money in those communities. So I think that really speaks well for the project itself, that even though they're going to be part of the people paying the 0.5% local option sales tax, they all unanimously, we didn't have one community that said that they didn't want to support the resolution, which was, I thought, to be quite amazing. The other piece that I just want to touch on briefly is that Chris talked briefly about the fact that we're close to Sioux Falls, Brookings, Watertown. We are under constant competitive pressure for both businesses to move to those locations and people to move to those locations. So it's vitally important that we find ways to grow our community in Lyon County specifically so that we can give people more reasons to move to our area and consider that a place where they want to live and stay. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you, members. I need to turn over the gavel. I have two of my bills up in a committee.
Just saying, I don't know if I want to touch the gavel, so I might wrap my knuckles. No. Just a little bit about Thursday's committee, if I can read Joe's writing here. Want to help me out here, buddy?
National funding presentation. Okay. Department of Admin.
Okay. Two bills. House File 203, the Woodard shutdown bill, lottery racing. We've heard that already. It will be coming back to us. And then House File 2169, the Beard rulemaking. Friday, we have March 9th. We have an invite for a road trip to Camp Ripley. About $15 a person, includes lunch and refreshments. So.
Committee will cover that.
The committee will cover that. Wow.
And the military affairs is paying for the buses.
Such a deal. So
people want to go.
When is it?
A week from Friday. Friday, March 9th. What time? Any details as far as when we leave and all that?
Come up with a talk.
Why wouldn't you leave in the summer?
I'll send the time.
Identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. We'll have buses here at the Capitol, as many as we need, 0700 at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we will return to the Capitol at 1700, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Also welcome to participate if you want to drive up. I know it's a Friday. Folks may be planning to go home after session, and it may cut their timeline.
I went to C-130.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the last time I was at Camp Ripley, I think it was summertime, and we walked all over the grounds and stuff. Should we wear our snow boots? Are we going to be walking out in the fields? Or out in the field, or whatever it is?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we do have a little bit of time at our CACTAP, the Combined Arms Collective Training Facility, but unless something very strange happens between now and Friday the 9th, which certainly could, I don't think you'll have to dress too much for the outdoors. Our intent is to showcase the facilities on Camp Ripley and demonstrate the need for our bonding request for the most part, but also to just show the growth and the activities that are ongoing at Camp Ripley.
Is there any chance that if I bring my AR, you'll provide the ammo or nothing like that?
Actually, Mr. Chair, we do plan to put all of the visitors in our simulator, the engagement skills trainer, and they will actually have an opportunity to simulate firing M16s in a very realistic fashion.
Oh, sounds fun. All right. So, that's it. We adjourned.